We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome in to an off-season edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Football Pod as we inch closer and closer to the 2024 NFL Draft, just over a week away. Nick Whale and Joe Bartle here with you as we are each Wednesday through the off-season. And we are once again brought to you by On Demand DFS. Do you ever think back to the golden days of fantasy football, you know, when it was all about the love of the game, the camaraderie, and the bragging rights? Well, our friends at On Demand DFS are bringing those days back with a revolutionary app that's changing the game for fantasy fans everywhere. Gone are the days of confusing entry fees, playing against unknown masses, or juggling multiple apps to trash talk your league mates. On Demand DFS is here to streamline your fantasy football experience, making it more about strategy, fun, and most importantly, the community. With On Demand DFS, you can create contests in seconds, invite your friends, and you're off to the races. No entry fees, no gimmicks, just pure fantasy football bliss. And here's the kicker. You're not limited to current season players. Imagine crafting your dream lineup from over 5,000 NFL legends and today's stars using real historical data to simulate the action. And for those who hate the wait, you'll love Turbo Mode. Contests wrap up in minutes, not hours, keeping the excitement going all week long. Download the On Demand DFS app now and get started with a 30-day free trial. Dive into a fantasy football experience that's rich in history, strategy, and most importantly, fun. It's time to create your legacy with the ultimate lineup of legends and live out your fantasy football dreams like never before. On Demand DFS, go check it out. Download the app. A lot of fun, super interesting concept, getting the historical players in the mix. So On Demand DFS, we appreciate them signing on as the presenting sponsor of the offseason RotoWire Fantasy Football Pod. Joe, you know, you and I, we don't position ourselves as the draft Knicks. We follow the draft. We love the draft. We'll talk about the draft on this very pod. But John and Mario, those are the guys who dive deep and know the names of guys who are going to go with like the 247th pick.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of news out there. We're the news guys, right? We break down, you know, guys who are already in the NFL. And, you know, for the last few weeks, we've had a few big signings. We, you know, went deep on the Stephon Diggs trade last week. Not a whole lot out there as we have a bit of a calm before the draft storm. I think the biggest news of the last few days, maybe other than Devontae Smith re-signing with the Eagles, Nick Chubb going back to the Browns, Royce Freeman signing on with the Dallas Cowboys. They have a running back now.
Yeah, and I want to be clear. Like, we could do draft stuff, but it's like, why would you listen to any other basketball strategy podcast when LeBron James and J.J. Redick are talking about it? You would listen to the Nick Shannon Alex Berutha podcast because that is of similar ilk as LeBron and J.J. But after that, like, what's the point? So what I'm saying is that Mario and John do a great job of really diving into the extended prospect stuff. We're going to get into it next week. I have my gambling and picks and props article from an NFL draft perspective that'll get posted around Monday or Tuesday of next week. And that'll be kind of like the totality of our show. So I'm saving a lot of the bullets that we'll discuss for next week's podcast. But yeah, news wise, there wasn't a whole lot this go around. I kind of thought the Royce Freeman news was at least noteworthy in the sense that it wasn't Ezekiel Elliott, right? Because like 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, whatever it was, I think Zeke could make a return back to Dallas. They have to sign a veteran. It can't just be Rico Dowdle and a 5'6 running back whose dad's in the coaching staff. That doesn't make sense to me. And I would assume the Cowboys will still draft somebody in the second round. Actually, I wouldn't rule out if there is a running back drafted in the first round by the Cowboys, even though I don't think this class at all deserves it, but that's how desperate I think the need of it it is for Dallas. And I had first thought it was a Deonta Foreman signing. I was like, oh, Deonta Foreman, great. Like, he could actually be the starting running back for the Cowboys. I'd be happy to draft him. And I like reread the name. I was like, wait, no, Royce Freeman, the guy who did okay with the Rams last year, but then previously hadn't done a whole lot in his career. And then it made a bit more of a pause. So what I think this means is any of the sexy veteran names that you could have projected, like I was doing with Ezekiel Elliott, are likely out the door at this point. There's a lot of teams now, and we'll talk about the Browns in just a second, who have three or four running backs. I'm like, oh, that guy could actually make more of a difference as a starter than Royce Freeman. So I'm not saying by the end of preseason, the Cowboys will have veteran Royce Freeman, Rico Dowdle, and then rookie A, whatever your pick might be, is your depth chart. But this, to me, actually makes me more confident that whoever the Cowboys draft, and we'll probably do some best balls, beginning of May and do the podcast focused on that. Whoever the Cowboys draft, I actually will feel confident that will be the starter, because Royce Freeman, at this point in his career, is not pushing for starting work. And I don't think Rico Dowdle is either. And if Mike McCarthy wants to continue doing his let's run the ball more mantra thing that was baloney last year, I'll take whatever rookie Dallas drafts, in day two.
It feels like a given that that's coming at some point, whether it's Jonathan Brooks, Trey Benson, Jalen Wright, Blake Corum, could be Marshawn Lloyd. Maybe if they wait a little longer, Bucky Irving. Yep. And there are teams out there. They're not Bijan Robinson type of names. I think we know that. But there will be starting opportunities out there, and Dallas looks like one of those spots. So as of right now, Dallas has Rico Dowdle. They still have Deuce Vaughn. Now you add Royce Freeman into this mix. It's not great. Going into the draft and assuming they add somebody who at the very least is a part-time starter, maybe splitting snaps, is which of these three guys are you most excited about for fantasy?
Yeah, the answer to me is zero. Like I know it's a cop-out answer, but if it's Royce Freeman as the veteran that gets brought on, assuming the Cowboys don't sign anybody else, then that means that guy is practice squad fodder, might get cut. I don't think Deuce Vaughn is all that enticing to me, and I don't think Rico Dowdle is any better than like a Tony Pollard C-minus version back when they had Ezekiel Elliott. He could maybe be spellback, like worse than Justin Jackson with the Chargers when they had Austin Eckler. Like that's the level I think of Rico Dowdle. So no, none of them is really the answer to me. And I go back to whoever the Cowboys draft day two makes me more interested. I'll be glad to push up to whatever draft capital they might go to. I was thinking about this as I was doing the podcast prep today and also my article for next week. Can you recall a time where there are so many teams that have such an obvious need for X thing? So like we did last week's podcast about Stephon Diggs trade. The Bills very clearly have a obvious need at receiver. The Cowboys have a very obvious need at running back. And you can go down the line. Like the Giants, I think, have an obvious need at receiver. The only issue is they also have obvious needs across the board. But there are enough teams kind of picking 15 and later. I'm like, wow, that team suspiciously needs this one thing. And I can't recall a time in the NFL over the past 5 or 6 years where there's been that many teams. You would think you want to kind of mask that a little bit because then teams won't try to trade in front of you and draft whatever player. The Bills are going to have to be aggressive getting their receiver because some team who wants one is definitely going to get ahead of 28 if it all just kind of falls down that way. I would imagine the Cowboys in the second round have to do the same thing at running back. It's really interesting philosophy that I don't know if it's due to teams like the Packers or others who have a lot of day two picks overall, kind of dictating how that market will go. But I thought it was really fascinating, and I hadn't really put it together until I was doing prep this week. And you're looking at teams that have minus 400 odds to take X position. It's like, well, that never happens. You never see that obvious and that dictated before.
That is a good point. And I think in some ways it's the right draft for that. It's like, if you're a team that needs a receiver, there will be receivers available for you. You might have to fight for certain names near the top of the draft board, but those receivers are out there. Like if you're the Jags, an obvious wide receiver team, and we'll see what route they go. I still think they're in the mix to potentially pull off a trade should that come to fruition. But if they hang around at 17, there'll be options there. Maybe it's Brian Thomas from LSU. Maybe it's AD Mitchell. Maybe you fall back a little bit and kind of get into that mix of guys who could go right on that first, second round border. But the running back market is interesting because there are plenty of like okay running backs in this draft. Like it's not a great running back draft as far as having the one or two kingpin players, who you might see push for a top 15 pick, which as much as we continue to devalue the running back position every few years, there's still one of those guys, whether it's Bijan or, Leonard Fournette or Ezekiel Elliott, whoever you want,
ETN,
Saquon Barkley, ETN. Right. But, you know, I think, you know, who ultimately pushes that first domino down for the running back market is going to be interesting, because Dallas is not alone here, right? There are several teams that I think have interest in these guys, but it's like, all right, who's going to have, I don't know if courage is the right word, but who's going to have the gall, if you will, to say, all right, we're kicking this off. And once one of those guys goes off the board, I think we might see a little bit of a scramble.
Yeah. And aggressive would be the word. Like, what team is going to be aggressive in just making the choice? You know, if you think about the last really good running back class, that DeAndre Swift and Jonathan Taylor and J.K. Dobbins and Cam Akers, and I know that those names like now aren't as attractive, especially the Dobbins and Akers, but the one that kicked things off was Clyde Edwards-Helaire, right? Like, we always kind of forget about that rookie running back of that rookie class, that he went first. The Chiefs kind of aggressively typecast what they wanted from their position in the backfield. I really think it will be the Cowboys that make the choice. And you had kind of poo-pooed, and rightfully so, the Nick Chubb news. I think it's interesting. I don't know if it's correlating necessarily, but I think it's interesting that the Cowboys finally chose to sign a veteran running back only a couple days after it was announced that Nick Chubb was taking a pay cut to return to Cleveland this season. And you look at the backfield, the Browns that they've added over, they did sign Deonta Foreman, they signed Nyheim Hines. Mm-hmm. I liked Jerome Ford. I was drafting Nick Chubb in a lot of places last year and then always one-twoing it with Jerome Ford later on the draft because I thought he was a talented guy. The Browns have three different backs, maybe not Hines per se, but the way they used Kareem Hunt in past years, you can more or less say that they have a function. They have three functioning running backs in their offense. I think it seemed like the Cowboys was maybe hoping that Nick Chubb was going to be a cap casualty of sorts. There's other guys. We mentioned Dalvin Cook, Ezekiel Elliott, that there are more prominent names. I think Dallas is opening up the backfield for whoever they draft, which would tell me then it's not Jonathan Brooks coming off the ACL injury. You know, it's funny. Neither you or I, when we were running through the running backs of rookie eligibility, mentioned Braylon Allen. Everyone wants to talk about Braylon Allen among that group. You and I both know he's not really of that tier, as Mass and Foco have watched over the years. But like there's a few guys, and I think Blake Corum makes a lot of sense to me. And if the Chargers don't take Blake Corum, of course, we're doing the Jim Harbaugh connection thing, but for a reason. If the Chargers aren't aggressive with their second round pick and taking the Jim Harbaugh guy, I think that kind of player profiles for Jerry. He's got the star power, the name recognition, and would fill in at a cheaper cost, but does, I think, kind of what Ezekiel A did to a lesser extent in Dallas. So I actually think it is the Cowboys that are going to be the ones that sort of kick off that day two run of running backs. Now, where is kind of the question. And if you're a gambling man, that'll be really interesting probably come Friday when you're assessing those odds for day two. But I actually think it is the Cowboys, ironically enough, despite this Royce Freeman news, that will be the team that goes up and gets a running back first.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
I want to go deeper on Nick Chubb because I think it went a little bit undercovered to me.
Yeah.
The real possibility that he was just not back with the Browns, right? I mean, this is a guy who is, you know, the premier player, you could argue, fantasy wise, at the position, or at least in that elite tier over the last few years. And obviously, when you're coming off of an injury like his, I think it's fair to wonder what he's going to look like. Now, that injury happened in week two against Pittsburgh. So, recovery wise, you know, it's a hell of a lot better than that happening week 17. But like you said, they've now insulated Nick Chubb in that backfield with Jerome Ford, with Deonta Foreman, bringing in Nyheim Hines. You know, you're looking at where he's going right now in best ball drafts, RB26. So same zone as, you know, James Conner, Joe Mixon in Houston, Javonte Williams, Brian Robinson. do we need to get a look at Nick Chubb? Do we need some reports as to how he's moving? Like, what is your level of optimism that he can get back to being somewhat close to the back that he was over the last couple of years?
Yeah. And when I took Nick Chubb in my lone best ball, that was at the March. It was like round eight, beginning of round eight. And guys that were in that range were Ramondre Stevenson, Raheem Mostert, DeAndre Swift, Zamir White. So it sounds like this news might have bumped him up just slightly, because I know the James Conner tier of running backs, which I believe is a little bit higher, was like sixth, seventh round. And if that's the case, like if we're talking about sixth round, seventh round, Nick Chubb, maybe I'm not as interested. But overall, I not that you're getting a starting running back, at least in redraft per se, but we're doing this podcast in middle of April. We're probably talking best ball. I think you can build a really constructive best ball roster with at least two running backs round six and later. Nick Chubb can be among that group. I like DeAndre Swift to a certain extent. I don't care for Ramondre Stevenson. Like, you can go down the list of those guys. I think James Conner makes a lot of sense too. I don't need to have confirmation that Nick Chubb is looking like what he could be, because I'm assuming with all the acquisitions the Browns have made at that position, they're anticipating Nick Chubb won't be available. You know, at least I'm assuming like a pup perspective where he's out for the first 4 weeks. Yeah. But I'm taking Nick Chubb in round eight or round seven with the idea that maybe I'm getting a running back that's of Nick Chubb's ilk for the best ball playoffs, you know, in rounds 13, 14, 15, 16. Like, that's the interesting part to me, because I think the Browns offense, no matter if it's Deshaun Watson or, heaven forbid, another backup scenario with Jameis Winston this time around for Cleveland, that team's offense is going to be good enough to move the ball. And I think you can typecast Nick Chubb to a certain perspective in Cleveland with the way they run their offense, that he'll be a red zone threat and still get opportunities. Maybe he's not averaging 5.5 yards per carry, but I still think he's going to be a good enough back. And like you mentioned, severe injury, but will have pretty optimal recovery timeline. Like, we're talking about almost a full year, possibly longer. I'm not avoiding Nick Chubb. There's a lot of running backs in there that I'll diversify by the end of best ball season. I'll have maybe 10% share of Nick Chubb, but I'm going to have more than one. I can guarantee you that with all these running backs past round six, you can really construct an interesting roster. And I think this will end for redraft. Like, when we talk about redraft season, end of July, beginning of August, people are going to be like, well, wait, why do I want to have five receivers in the first seven rounds? That doesn't make a lot of sense for my auto-drafted ESPN league or Yahoo. That will then change. You'll see Nick Chubb and Joe Mixon's and James Conner's of the world go a little bit higher. But right now, I think there's a lot of value into that pick.
So for what it's worth, the last update we received on Nick Chubb was in late March, so about 2.5-3 weeks ago. The expectation at that time was that he would resume, basically normal running, with his full body weight, and the next few months here. So we're talking, April, May, June. They're giving him a long runway to try to get back to where he needs to be physically before they start thinking about his availability for the start of the season. I mean, we haven't had to think about this in a long time, but I do recall, for as bad as that injury looked, I think the initial, prognosis coming out was, all right, this maybe looked a little worse than it was. There's not maybe as much damage as we initially thought, but at the end of the day, it's still a massively concerning injury for Nick Chubb. And I'm with you. I mean, I'm on the relatively optimistic side here. Certainly you're not going to reach for Nick Chubb. And if the cost starts to rise, if he starts to, if we get an indication that he'll be ready to go for the start of the season, I'm still going to be a little bit cautious, right? I don't think this is I think if nothing else, they're at least going to limit the workload, right? Even if Nick Chubb looks like himself, I don't think we're going to see the same kind of volume from him, especially early in the season.
Yeah, and I think the Browns play it the right way with how they constructed the roster. The way they utilize their running backs, with how important Nick Chubb has been, signing a guy like Deonta Foreman, who has been great, in the past three stints with different teams, effectively doing the Nick Chubb role, you're protecting yourself in the instance that Nick Chubb is not back to full capacity at the beginning of August or whatever it is, beginning of September for the regular season. Great. Jerome Ford and Nyheim Hines, both really good returners. Before, Jerome Ford was the backup to Nick Chubb. He was one of the better returners in the NFL. Well, Nyheim Hines, same way, coming off that weird jet ski accident as well, missed the whole season. If Nyheim Hines is not ready to be what they need him to be as a returner, okay, Jerome Ford can do that because they have Deonta Foreman, or vice versa. You have a pass catching running back in Nyheim Hines who kind of helps out with Jerome Ford. So you've kind of protected and insulated yourself in a variety of different ways with a lot of different injuries and relatively cheap in that backfield. So I like the way they've done things. Ironically, if they had signed zero people, if Deonta Foreman wasn't on the roster, if he had just Jerome Ford, I would be more interested in drafting Nick Chubb, because it tells me as a team, the Browns are expecting Nick Chubb to be ready week one, but I think the round eight, round seven tax is in large part because I'm anticipating he misses the first four games of the season by default, and we'll see what happens towards the end of the campaign when he's closer to his full health from this nasty injury that he had.
So we have a wide receiver contract to discuss. That is Devontae Smith, yep. Of course, settling on a new three-year extension with the Eagles. Could be worth up to $75 million overall. So, you know, when we take a look at the average annual value of this, it does come in right at $25 per year, $51 million in guarantees. And this is kind of what the Eagles do, right? They're proactive in getting these contracts done with their premier players. I don't necessarily have a whole lot to say about this deal specifically. I think it makes a lot of sense. I think it's about market rate for someone like Devontae Smith, who's in an interesting spot, right? I think one of the better young receivers in the league, but yep. Also the second best receiver on his own team. And, you know, it's interesting. Once this deal broke last week, it wasn't necessarily Devontae Smith trending on Twitter. It was T. Higgins. It was CeeDee Lamb. It was Justin.
Yeah, Washington. Good point.
So I think that the bigger conversation here is how, if at all, does this really affect that market? I think it provides a baseline, obviously, but if I'm CeeDee Lamb, if I'm Justin Jefferson, I certainly feel like I'm worth more than Devontae Smith.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. There was a graphic, at least I saw yesterday on Twitter, Tuesday, and it was like teams that Devonta Smith would be number one overall receiver for, and it was doing one of those like tier S and then tier A and tier B. Like, I'm sure you guys can at least visualize what this graph is if you don't already know. And the graph had at least 13 teams that Devonta Smith would be the top receiver for. And I was like, is that really true? And then going over the tier A, that ones would probably be, it was another 10 or so. And it ended up being the list of essentially 20 of the 32 teams, Devonta Smith's number one receiver. And that felt like a lot to me. But when I looked over those names, I'm going over the receiver, I'm like, yeah, you know, like my Packers, for example, I like Christian Watson. I love Romeo Dobbs. I think Jaden Reed could be really special. Devonta Smith is definitely the number one receiver on Green Bay if he's there today. And you go down the list, you're like, oh, that makes a lot of sense. So when I saw the news of the extension for Devonta Smith, which would put him in line for a new contract entering his age 28 season, that was a three-year deal I thought was really interesting at first. But from Devonta's perspective, probably the right call on that one. I took it like a dynasty way, not the Jefferson and CeeDee Lamb one. And while John and Mario are the Charles Barkley and LeBron James and JJ Redick's of the NBA podcasting world, or I guess the dynasty pod, the rookie prospects, Alan Sulzowski is that same version from a dynasty perspective, and he does the money stuff. So I'm sure he'll tackle this at a different point.
He's the Dennis Rodman of dynasty pod.
Thank you. That's even better version. Yes. And his guest azure, whatever it might be that week, they do a fantastic job. So it's, again, not necessarily our lane dynasty wise, but I thought Devonta Smith, like, that actually hurt his value. So we're saying three more years as the wide receiver B in Philadelphia, no matter how good he is, over 1,000 receiving yards in two of those three seasons, it's just capped. And not that I think Jalen Hurts is a bad quarterback at all, but the way that Jalen Hurts operates best as a quarterback, and if you are trying to win games, you want Hurts to be most successful, that also caps Devonta Smith's fantasy value. So like the selling period from a dynasty perspective for Devonta Smith, I think is come and gone. Like he is no longer among the top 15 wide receivers. So contract-wise, you're right. CeeDee Lamb and Justin Jefferson both, I think, have to be making upwards at least of $30 million, probably past Devontae Adams' contract and then some. But I also thought from a dynasty perspective, this is more of a negative for Devonta Smith, who, again, by age 28, enters his next contract and theoretically then could find himself in a better fantasy position.
Is it a guarantee that A.J. Brown plays out that contract with Philly? Right?
Good question.
I think that's the other thing here is, are you potentially insulating yourself if you're Philly, you know, for the possibility that perhaps you move on from AJ Brown after this year, when you have an out in that contract? You're still eating some dead cap, as is always the case in those spots, but there is a potential out after 2024 for AJ Brown. And it's really hard to say where this Eagles team is going to be standing at the end of 2024. Like, would it shock you if they were in the Super Bowl? No, it wouldn't. It shock you if, you know, the second half of last season carries over and we just are looking back and saying, man, what happened to this team? Right. It could go either way. And I think Philly is bracing in some ways for that possibility.
I would be less shocked if the Cowboys missed the playoffs next year than the Eagles. Like, I actually, like, if you're saying of the two, this ended really poorly. It's inexplicable, right? The way they're running along to begin the season with 10-1, 11-1, whatever it was. They also had a really difficult second half of the season. Like, this was very easily identifiable. Like when Jake and I did our over under win totals, I think I had said something like the Eagles are going to go 9-1 and then they might not win more than two games the rest of the way. I didn't think they would just lose out completely, but they had a really difficult second half of the season. And the coaching stuff sounded like it was a big deal. Like if you talked to the people around there or read any of the beat reports and whatever else, just the nasty coaching atmosphere and headlined by Matt Patricia somehow finding his way into another prominent coaching position was kind of like the cherry on top of really nasty looking pie. That's gone by default. Cannot be worse. I think that's fair to say. Maybe I'm projecting things unduly on Philadelphia fans here. It can't be worse. I think Philadelphia's gonna be just fine. And to me, you just want to have as many good players on your team as possible. Like if you can fit it in the cap restraints, if you can figure out how to do that, and not put yourself in a Saints situation where you're hemorrhaging your roster for a decade to come, make it work. And if AJ Brown is gone, I think if you put Devonta Smith in the AJ Brown role, that will also not help Philadelphia's offense. So like that, they've gone about it the wrong way in that regard too. I would sooner assume you keep one of the best receivers in the NFL around as long as you can. And if you can figure out the second receiver too, yeah, do that as well. And then keep drafting a defense or defensive line or whatever Howie Roseman wants to do. But I don't assume AJ Brown's gone, but I had not thought of that. And that's also an interesting wrinkle on top of the Justin Jefferson and CeeDee Lamb contracts too.
All right, let's talk a little draft here. We'll keep this episode a bit shorter. Obviously not a ton of news going on right now, but interesting to dig in on some of the, the draft pick over under numbers, some of the big prospects in the draft. JJ McCarthy is one who really jumps out to me at 5.5. Over 5.5 is +120, under 5.5, -150 right now. And the more mocks you read, the more frequently you start to see JJ McCarthy at 4 to the New York Giants. I'm not a McCarthy guy. With that said, I'm also willing to throw my hands up and say that I've been extremely wrong about a lot of prospects over the years, not only in the NFL and in the NBA as well. And, the numbers would historically indicate that it's almost a 50-50 proposition when it comes to some of these quarterbacks. We've had guys that we thought wouldn't succeed, turned out to be great quarterbacks. We've had guys who look like can't miss prospects turn into busts. So I'm not just going to sit here and say this would be a ridiculous mistake by the New York Giants, but just from a process standpoint, oh my goodness, this team won a playoff game 2 years ago, Joe.
Yeah, but it was against the Vikings, who were kind of a fake 14-3, whatever. Yeah. So I actually think it's okay. We'll do it like backwards here. The idea the Giants could get a quarterback in the draft early in the first round is fine. Ironically, it's going to be the same mistake they made with Daniel Jones, that they chose to trade up for a guy that really wasn't all that good. I feel that same way with McCarthy. I think McCarthy is a better quarterback than Daniel Jones. If you're saying today, how can I improve my roster? One of the quickest and easiest ways to get a better quarterback, you look at the Texans, for example, got a really, really good quarterback in CJ Stroud, instantly became a playoff team, looked really good in that process. McCarthy isn't going to do that, but he will be better than Daniel Jones. And if you are doing this from a team building perspective, it's significantly cheaper to do so. Now, you're not factoring the draft capital that would happen if the Giants do trade up for JJ McCarthy, but from 6-4, fine. You are not wrong. I've seen a lot of people project that McCarthy picked number 4. We had talked last week, if Jaden Daniels is guaranteed at number 2, then it would be Drake May theoretically at number 3. I want to just say, and I put on a small possible prop bet that I wouldn't be surprised if it's Drake May 2 and then the Vikings trade up for number 3 to get Jaden Daniels. That's +1100 for the Vikings to have Jaden Daniels as their first pick on DraftKings right now. I'm just of the belief that the past 20 years of scouting quarterbacks would say Drake May is easily the second best quarterback in this class. Big tall guy with an arm. He is good at birthday parties, to use the draft day example, whatever it might be, that horrible movie with Kevin Costner. It wasn't that bad, actually. I'm self-admitting
right
now.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, well, okay. Well, now I know what we're doing in our podcast next week. Live watching of draft day with Nick and Joe. Tune in for that. No, I think Drake May is the prototypical quarterback, and saying you're interested in Jaden Daniels is just smokescreen stuff. This week, this period, is the absolute worst from the perspective of trying to map out mock drafts or getting prop bets, you know, around this time last year, you had the infamous Reddit post that had Will Levis going number one overall, which shot his odds up significantly. And it was literally just a Reddit post. There was no other reporting other than that. So I'm always really anxious. By Monday and Tuesday of next week, you have a more finalized deal. I believe JJ McCarthy is not that great of a quarterback. I didn't think Mac Jones was very good. Got that one correct. I was adamant that Zach Wilson was certainly not worth number two. Got that one correct as well. I liked Trey Lance a lot. I thought the Niners made an absolute steal. I felt really confident that Justin Fields, the Packers fan, was going to kill me for years to come. So as much as I want to tout the Zach Wilson and Mac Jones stuff of the world, this is a crapshoot. I mean, that was 50-50 right there. And I by no means am doing this on a daily basis. So there's pluses to McCarthy. Again, you can listen to John and Mario talk about his processing. I think he feels like a more athletic version of Brock Purdy, but not nearly the level of processing ability that Brock Purdy has, which is why he's as successful as he is. It isn't just George Kittle and Brandon Ayuk and Debo Samuel, but the way he's able to read the defense and make the quick throw, that almost feels Tom Brady-esque. But I know it's sacrilegious to say, but that's what I kind of get from Brock Purdy. That's the best case scenario for JJ McCarthy. But does a Brock Purdy led offense with Darren Waller and Paris Campbell and rookie receiver second round seem as enticing to you as a Brock Purdy offense by Kyle Shanahan, Ayuk, George Kittle, Samuel? No, is the obvious answer. And the Niners have a way better offensive line than the Giants do. So I would be very nervous if I was a Giants fan trading up to number four, because it feels like the same mistakes that Gettleman made that led to Daniel Jones and the conundrum that they are in, you know, 5 years later.
Do we even know if Darren Waller is going to be there, by the way? I believe he's still in limbo as far as whether or not he's even going to play next year. Yes.
Yeah, he might be retiring. He might not be. And they don't really know when he's making that decision. There were reports a couple of weeks ago that said he was retired. And then he came out and said, no, I'm still thinking about it. I assume he's playing because it's a massive contract that he'll be able to get this year. But the way that deal is set up, that he can kind of get out of things, or the Giants could get out of things next year. So it's one of those "you're fired, no, I quit" scenarios that I think is going to occur next season with Darren Waller. But who knows? Maybe he'll turn things around. He's had a lot of injuries. I'm not saying that he shouldn't retire or whatever else. They can't contemplate that. But I would think the prominent target in an offense that lacks very prominent targets would be enticing enough for me to stick around one more year, even if it means it's Drew Lock and Daniel Jones throwing me the ball as opposed to somebody actually good. Fair point. We don't know if Darren Waller quite yet is re-upping for 2024.
You know, another interesting team in round one for a number of reasons, specifically because they just haven't picked in round one in almost a decade, is the LA Rams, sitting at 19. Can you name the last player of the Rams selected in round one?
Goff, right?
Jared Goff in 2016. They have not made a round one selection since 2016. And I'm really high on this Rams team. You know that. We've talked about them. I was very wrong in picking them to beat Detroit in the wild card round, but I think this is a team that has at least another run or two in them with this core. Obviously, you get the infusion of Puka Nacua, and that kind of allows you to you know, reset around this core. Where do they go at 19? Is there a specific spot, a specific position group even that you think would make sense for the Rams?
Yeah, again, I had mentioned this is the worst time of the year to try to do this type of stuff because there's a lot of projecting and smoke screens going out. But Peter Schrager of NFL.com, and I think he still does Inside NFL or Good Morning NFL.
Yep.
I don't know if that show is still going on.
Good Morning Football.
He's typically
moving to LA.
Yeah. He's typically one of the better ones when it comes to this level of I have sources telling me this kind of thing. Right. And Sean McVay, head coach of the Rams, is like a noted confidant of Peter Schrager. So Peter released his mock draft, I think it was yesterday, on NFL.com. And he said, I guarantee if the Rams stay at their pick, we can get to the if part in a second. If the Rams stay at pick 19, they will take an offensive player. Sean McVay is doing that clasping the hams meme, running together. I finally get to draft an offensive guy for the first time. First time in Sean McVay's career, he has a first round pick in which he can use. He will definitely use it on an offensive guy. So when something like that happens, and then Jordan Rodriguez, one of the best beat reporters in the NFL, but for the Rams specifically, retweeted that and did like the eye emoji thing. That seems like a lot of smoke fire scenario. So like when two of those people are on things, it makes me interesting. So I looked at the DraftKings odds for first round picks for the Rams, minus 160 for a pass rusher slash edge, which makes complete sense, especially if Aaron Donald retired. But after that, plus 170 odds for offensive line, then plus 1300 receiver, plus 2000 quarterback, and plus 15,000 for running back. If you're saying they have to draft a skill position guy, I didn't include tight end because if Brock Bowers isn't there, the Rams are going to be dumb enough to take one in the first round. But that was like fourth among the, yes, they need a tight end, but they're not taking Jatavion Sanders in pick 19. I would assume it's offensive line. We could do that. Who do they take in the first round? But if you want to name notable second round picks, Van Jefferson and Tutu Atwell, they haven't done a great job of even drafting early on with those picks. Steve Avila, their guard that they took last year with their first pick, which was a second rounder, has worked out well. And I don't know if it's a Les Snead thing or Sean McVay saying, I need this archetype of receiver. And that's how you get the Tutu Atwells and Van Jeffersons of the world. But I almost wonder if they're like, yeah, the safest thing for us to do is take offensive line. I would assume, though, the Rams will trade down because there is a glut of tackles and offensive line guys, really pick like 16 and later on that you can mock out. And I think the Rams would make sense. And they could also get another receiver with a second round pick if they trade it down. The question I would pose to you, and I don't think there's odds out yet, but if I said over under 4.5 trades occur in the first round, would you take the over or would you take the under? Because I think the books will price it up. They're going to guarantee at least one of the quarterback trade ups, and they'll guarantee at least one of the let's trade up from the beginning of the second round to the early first round. I'm sorry, the late first round. So you say there's two minimum right there. Will there be another two to hit the over on that?
That's so tough. I mean, we're assuming these are, we'd have to get five to hit the over, right?
If it's yeah, I guess so. Another three.
And these need to be unique trades, right? So we're not saying, all right, you know, the Vikings are moving up and this team is moving down. That's one trade, right?
That would be one trade. Yep.
Five seems like a lot. Five seems like a lot to me. I think there are so many appealing players. And as you mentioned earlier, which was a good point, a lot of this guy fits what we need type of picks that I don't know that there are that many teams, you know, necessarily looking to get out of picks. I think there are a lot of teams that would like to trade up. Like I'm very interested to see, like there's been rumors, you know, hovering around the northern portion of the Jacksonville Jaguars fan base here in Milwaukee that, you know, they would be a team that, you know, would they give up, you know, their pick right now at 17 plus whatever else it takes to get into the Malik Nabers, Roma Dunze range. I think that is an alternative. You know, if they can't work a trade for someone like Ayuk or more preferably T. Higgins, which I think is relatively unlikely at this point. You know, for me, I would rather you move up and lock in one of those elite guys than take what feels like more of a chance on, you know, someone like Brian Thomas, who's a very good prospect, but he's not Malik Nabers. He's not Roma Dunze. You're probably not getting into Marvin Harrison range, which ultimately is fine with me, but I would take the under on 4.5. I could see 3 or 4 trades. Five would be a lot. And you know, maybe 8 days from now, I'll look stupid when teams are moving all over the place. But I think I would go under on that. I think the like you said, I think there's some trades that we already feel like we know are going to happen. Maybe not exactly which teams, but you could kind of say, all right, these are the candidates. One of them is going to pull the trigger. I don't know if I can get to five.
Yeah, I was. So I would assume like a 4.5 over under on the trades. Again, I don't know if there are any books that have this out yet. I have not found it yet. This article that I'll be writing normally is done Monday or Tuesday, and we'll have all that information. So we'll go over more next week. I'm assuming the books are going to put it at 4.5 because 2 feel like a guarantee. And I was factoring in, there's just a lot of smoke about Brandon Ayuk going somewhere. Yep. That teams could be doing something. We didn't really even mention this, but the DeForest Buckner extension for the Colts, fine, really good player. The Colts have been just re-signing all their players, whatever else. But they added void years under the contract, which went underreported. That's added $28.5 million in cap space. You have Michael Pittman and then what? Josh Downs, Alec Pierce. Like that could be an Alec Pierce team too. I'm sorry, that could be a Brandon Ayuk team as well to push out Alec Pierce. And they have pick 15, which to me feels like an overpay for Ayuk, but if you are the Colts and you've freed up the cap space and oops, sorry for banging on my mic, want to build on to Anthony Richardson's second year, that's interesting if Brock Bowers doesn't fall to them at that point. So I like what you're saying about that draft. And to me, this receiver group feels a lot like the 2022 class that had Drake London, Garrett Wilson, Chris Olave, and Jameson Williams. And it was like a very clear tier pack of four. And afterwards, it was Jahan Dotson, Treylon Burks that were the other two receivers in the first round. Christian Watson was the beginning of the second round pick. And then you had Wandale Robinson and John Metchie that rounded out that middle second round. I think the Brian Thomas tier and Keon Coleman, and you can name the AD Mitchell. You can Jalen Polk's been getting a lot of publicity over this past 3 or 4 days on Twitter, at least. Whatever tier of receivers you want, I think all those guys are better than the John Mechie and Wandale Robinson group of receivers. But I had campaigned for the Packers at that point to trade up to get Chris Olave because I felt like he was an exceptional receiver. That is what a team should do from Lake Neighbors or Dunze. I don't think Marvin Harrison's really, you're going to be able to get enough draft capital to do that, especially the quarterbacks possibly being around. But that makes sense. Like if you feel like you need a receiver, if you are a receiver away, then I would be trying to trade up. And I think that's going to happen. I think one of Odunze or Malik Nabers is going to have a team trade up into the top 10 to get them and give up draft capital. So I actually will take the over on 4.5. Just go back to my question. If you're giving me plus odds, I'll cheat a little bit. If it's like plus 125 on over 4.5, I think between factoring in Ayuk possibly moving and a Nabers trade up or a Odunze one, I like that.
Okay. Okay. And I think, you know, when you talk about the Colts and the Jaguars specifically, I think those teams are motivated because it's turned into an arms race, not only in their own division, but in the AFC in general, right? It's like, if you're the Jags and you come out of this draft and you don't trade for a premier receiver or you don't land, you know, one of those top three guys, you feel okay if you're bringing in someone like Brian Thomas, but you then look what Houston's doing, right? Or if the Colts in your own division are the team that trades up and grabs Malik Nabers or a team that grabs Brock Bowers, all of a sudden, you know, you felt like you had this big window going into last year where you're like, all right, Texans, you know, they're picking at the top of the draft. They'll be bad for a while. Colts, you know, who knows? They're rolling the dice with Anthony Richardson. I mean, there's a real possibility that the Jags go into this season as like the third best team on paper in the AFC South. And even you know, the team that we think is the doormat in that division added a lot of talent in Tennessee this offseason. So I think there are some motivational factors to consider as well. Last thing, we'll close on this. We keep mentioning Brock Bowers. A lot of Brock Bowers to New York at number 10 scheme lately. And if you look over at the DraftKings Sportsbook team to select Brock Bowers, the New York Jets are plus 140, the Colts plus 370, Cincinnati 9-1, Bears 10-1, Chargers 10-1, Broncos 10-1. The Jets have a ton of needs, right? They're in a good and a bad spot, right? Where it's kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't. Because at 10, you're going to get a good player, whether it's an offensive tackle, whether it's a receiver, whether it's a tight end, you're going to get an instant impact player, but making that choice, I think, is going to be really difficult.
So I think there's a lot of teams, and this goes back to what you were saying with the AFC South overall. It's an arms race of sorts. There's a lot of obvious landing spots for these players. The Jets being Brock Bowers' target, very interesting to me, not just because that's number 10, but right above them is the Bears at number 9. I would assume after they signed the tight end away from the Chargers, gosh, I should remember this, and also have Cole Kmet, that they're not in position to trade or take Brock Bowers. But another team could jump the Jets. Like it just goes back to, there are so many teams that have obvious answers or could use obvious answers for X position that you have now made not just yourself a target to be traded up on, but have made yourself and your fan base so desperate. Not that the GMs are ever worried about making the fan bases happy, but I just think there's a lot of opportunity. And a lot of teams like the Bears, for example, like if they were just compile more draft picks, I mean, that's what they've done now the past 3 years with Ryan Poles as their GM, is just getting more and more of these. Now they take the Velus Jones of the world with their third round picks or fourth rounders, and that hasn't proved to be very fruitful. But the concept of, hey, let's take advantage of a scenario, a team might be a little bit overpaying to jump ahead of Brock Bowers' possible landing spot, that happens all the time. And I think this first round, if you are looking for an impact player, and that doesn't have to just be the Malik Nabers or Brock Bowers. It could be Cooper DeJean, the corner that I really want the Packers to take that will definitely not fall there, pick 15 to 18 range. There's enough impact players, and then otherwise a lot of offensive line and pass rushers that aren't like premium pass rusher prospects that if you don't get one of those impact players, you're kind of shrugging your shoulders and say, okay, fine, this is a good player. This will help make my roster better, but it won't make my team overall like have a dynamic factor to it. I really think there's an opportunity for a team to trade in front of the Jets, who've made themselves such an obvious landing spot for Brock Bowers, and that the Bears or even the Falcons at 8, you know, they've could use a lot to reconstruct their defense. Kirk Cousins is great. They have so many different offensive guys they've drafted. You just say, hey, we'll slap you another second round pick so we can draft up Brock Bowers of the world. There's enough teams to back into that top 10 that I think trading out is a very realistic possibility.
I think for the Jets, even if that happens, if somebody were to trade up for Brock Bowers, and then you start to get into acquisition costs too. It's like, all right, it's one thing to burn a top 10 pick on a tight end. It's another thing to spend draft capital to move into the top 10 and then spend that pick on a
good point.
What's ultimately a non-premium position from a contract perspective. But if that happens, it almost takes the decision out of the Jets' hands. And I think at that point, you just default, you take the offensive lineman and you move on. And ultimately, I think you're okay with that. I know I said that was the last thing, but I got one more for you.
I gave you too many different compelling trade questions. That's the issue.
Well, very few teams have more draft capital than the Green Bay Packers, Joe, who have 11 picks in this draft. They have 5 picks in the top 100. Washington also has 5 in the top 100. Oh, excuse me. They have 6. Well, one of them is pick 100. And then Arizona has 6 in the top 90. But the Packers are right there. You know, in terms of draft value calculation, they are 6th, despite picking, you know, at 25 for their first pick. They have the capital to move up, not necessarily, you know, all the way into the top 5 or the top 10. I don't know if that would be something that would make sense. But is there a player who, you know, you mentioned Cooper DeJean, like would the Packers consider not moving all the way up the draft board, but moving up a few spots, or, you know, buying back into the end of round one? Like, is there any possibility there that, you know, a team probably doesn't necessarily want to go into a draft, you know, carrying 11 rookies into camp? Not that they're all going to make the team, but you know what I mean?
Right. And I'll actually use the Cardinals as an example as well, too. Like, they have a pretty fleshed out roster. Like, if you kind of project what their 53 man looks like, and Mario and John talked about this on the Thursday shows before, they probably have 45 or 46 dudes that you're like, yeah, pretty confidently we'll make it over. So if you're saying, let's add another 6 picks in the first 90, well, then wait, how do you get all these rookies on there? And also the guys later on that you maybe want to speculate on. So I actually think the Cardinals are another, this is why I'll take the over, I guess, in the 4.5, because there's enough of the Cardinals and Packers and Commanders teams that can use those draft picks just enough to space things out and be aggressive to get their guy. In the Packers example, the only one I really think they could go for is Cooper DeJean, which is why I know they won't, because I've followed the Packers closely for my entire life, but certainly over the past 10 years, and any player I really want them to take or really want them to be aggressive do, they just will never make that choice, whether it be middle linebacker or whatever else. So I don't foresee them trading up. The only issue is their roster also is sneakily at like 45 or 48 that you'd say confidently are coming over into next season. And then I would almost assume the draft picks get rolled back into next year. Like they'll find a trade partner who will be doing some of that. They'll move back out. Like, I could see them trading out of 25 before I could see them trading up, which makes zero sense when you have 11 picks already in this draft or whatever it is, you know, 5 in the first 3 rounds. The positions of need, safety, corner, a tackle, probably a swing tackle, maybe an interior guard. Yep. None of those you're really taking at 15, at least with this draft class, or going up any higher. So I think they'll either settle at 25 or trade out of it. That feels like more of the Gutekunst answer to things. But man, I will dream about the day that they trade up for an Adunze or Neighbors until that bubble is officially popped, because that would be an exciting element to the team that has not made those choices in a long time.
I think you and I are both be rooting for the same thing on draft night. I want the Jags to trade up. If you have an opportunity to land Rome Adunze in either of those spots, I'm all in on that. We will go full on for the NFL draft next Wednesday. We'll talk draft props. We'll preview as much as we can. Should be a longer show next week. NFL draft 8 days away. Cannot wait, Joe. And, you know, we're like 370 some days away from the draft actually being in Green Bay.
Yes, I'll be there.
Maybe we'll have to do a live show, you know, out in the Lambeau Field parking lot.
Oh, we're going to get credentials already. I've already talked to Peter Shankey about that. We can have the whole crew there, all the RotoWire guys here in the Madison area. We can make that happen. There's nothing else to do in Green Bay, right, Packers? Just get the RotoWire team. We're a local group, a statewide group, well-known. This is a very easy call. We'll do all the podcast hosting for the draft weekend. That's an easy sell for us.
All right, well, we will have 2025 NFL draft coverage coming for you this time next year. But next week, we'll go all in on the NFL draft. Props, plays, predictions, everything coming your way next week. Make sure you check out all the other pods on the RotoWire Fantasy Football feed. Plenty of action coming your way throughout the offseason. We'll keep these going after the draft, through free agency, into the summer period. Always plenty to discuss when it comes to the NFL. Joe, good chatting with you as always, man. Do it again next week.